You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is Tea Break Archaeology, where we explore the ancient origins of everyday objects. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Tea Break Archaeology. I'm Matilda Siebrecht, and this is part two of our tea break with Alexandra Sabir, talking all about bookbinding. Welcome back, Alex. Nice to have you here again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So last episode, we chatted a little bit about kind of your background, how you got into the sort of traditional craft, how the craft itself is seen. But yeah, of course, this is Tea Break Archaeology. We need to go back a little bit further. So I guess to start us off, what would be your favorite kind of fun fact about the sort of history or the development of bookbinding as a craft?
Yeah, so I think the most interesting thing is the codices or notebooks that we know today originated in India in the 2nd century BCE, and they were made from palm leaves, like dried palm leaves, and then strips of wood sandwiched together. So yeah, notebooks have been around for ages, but they took a bit of time to get here.
Yes, fair. And I mean, in terms of notebooks, what were the sort of original notebooks actually used for? Like, were they used, you know, as a diary, like Dear Diary, oh my gosh, you know, it's really hot here in India. What were they generally used for?
Yeah, so they originated as spaces to house kind of religious texts, things like that. But the Romans actually tended to use them for like Dear Diary entries. So, you know, Dear Diary, we just took another town. Yeah, and then they just kind of moved on to, again, you know, there was a huge resurgence in religious texts, especially during the medieval era, I think, and the Renaissance. And then, sorry, anyone who's listening, I'm really sorry about my historical overlaps. Please don't shoot.
Don't worry. Well, you know, it's a big place, history.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. But yeah, so, and then of course, you know, they became like diaries again and spaces to house more kind of businessy transactions. So yeah, they've come a long way.
Yeah. No, I always find it really interesting because I know that not necessarily with notebooks, but with the first sort of written text that you have are basically administration, like people noting down administration, which is, it's just an interesting concept to think about that, like, when you're first writing down something, what do you write down? What
literally
put down in, you know, permanently? Yeah. And yeah, so I always assumed, oh yeah, it was people wanting to write their thoughts and everything. But like you say, well, I guess religion and the sort of importance of things, which, yeah, I suppose makes sense. But you'd hope that people would be also a little bit more, you know, I don't know, writing poetry or writing their personal thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Something a bit more romantic.
Yeah, but I guess were they sort of a commonly held thing? If they were just being made for religious texts, that kind of thing, were they sort of seen as quite valuable items back in the day?
Yeah, so like bookbinding in general, like, it was because, of course, you know, not everyone was taught to read, not everyone was taught to write. Mm. So books and notebooks were, I'm trying to find the right word here, status symbols. So the more jewellery, the more stones, the more leather that you had on your notebook or your book, especially, you know, your that showed how high up in, you know, society you were. So yeah, they were definite status symbols.
Interesting, which, you know, relates a bit to the brand Solemnica, right? You know,
I do try to push as many rubies as possible.
That'll be the next one in the notebook club, is rubies and emeralds. Might up the price a little bit. And you mentioned already, so you've mentioned like leather there, you've mentioned the palm leaves and the wood. I mean, what sorts of materials were people using? Is it something that changes around the world or over time?
Yeah, so generally, like, papyrus is the biggest one, but that only grows in, trying to remember, Madagascar, Africa, and the Mediterranean. So in Asia, palm leaves were used. And then around the world, I think because of trade and things like that, they started using vellum, which is cow skin, parchment, which is sheepskin. And then, what else did they use? Oh yeah, they started using kind of what we now know as paper for their scrolls and things. So yeah.
Yeah, which I love watching those videos. Who was it? It's this a lady based somewhere in China, Litsi, I think she's called, who has these videos of sort of traditional crafts in China. And she did a whole one about paper and making paper.
Wow.
And it's always so interesting to see the kind of different paper source? Because I mean, for example, like the paper that you use, is it traditional? I mean, is it just standard paper? Have you ever worked with more, I don't know, alternative paper sorts?
No, it's a really good question. So I try to use sustainably sourced paper. So I use FSC certified recycled flecked paper, not only because of the GSM, but also because of its credentials. But I love making my own paper. It's not very high quality because it's just using pulp, but you can just make your own paper at home. And I do love looking into unfortunately, not many people do it as a craft, but paper makers, so people who still carry on that very traditional craft of making paper.
I think I've tried it once at some workshop somewhere, and it ended up, I mean, it was paper, but like, I'm not sure how useful it would be if I had to make a whole notebook.
I'm always the same. And then I look into why, and I'm like, oh, that's why, because I wasn't using the right kind of width of, you know, sheds or whatever.
And would it have been that because you have all these different materials involved in, I mean, like you say, historically, it sort of changed over time. It changed depending on where you were. Did you have then people who were specialized in the different materials kind of working together? Would you have had one like bookbinder or notebook maker or something like that? Like, how was the, do you know how the tasks were split?
You had bookbinders who specialized in the making of these books, especially when religious texts became a bit more kind of mainstream. You would have bookbinding houses. So they were usually, you know, passed father to son, and they would specialize in a certain style, which you could tell from the stamps that they put. They, leather during the 18th century, leather was a more valuable industry than metalworking. So using leather, being able to use leather was, again, really good for business. It was a status symbol. But yeah, there were, you know, there were definitely houses that specialized in this.
Okay, but they had to be able to do all of it, I guess, or they sort of, they were able to do all these things, which, that's really fascinating. Yeah. Oh. And in terms of, I mean, we talked about, you know, you already mentioned the first evidence of what we would maybe classify as a book comes from very early on in India. But in terms of the sort of craft of bookbinding itself and the, I guess it's more of a historic craft. It's definitely not a prehistoric craft, because prehistory means before writing. But so it's definitely a historic craft. But in terms of more recent history, I guess, how has the craft of bookbinding kind of changed since that first idea of the master in his house creating with the stamp? You know, how is that developed?
So again, like post-industrial revolution, it definitely became less, I think, less popular to go into, just because, you know, as more people learned to read, as publishing houses produced more and more books, of course, like, you from a business point of view, you don't want to spend as much time creating one book. You want to speed it up and get your, you know, your money for this piece. And so then, like today, paperbacks are created incredibly cheaply, and bookbinding has become more and more an artisan craft. So something which we kind of view for posterity purposes rather than something which is actually viewed as useful, I'd say.
Yeah, because actually I'm just trying to think. I'm looking at my notebooks and my things now, because bookbinding is that whole thing where you have to sew the edges, right? But then, if it's sort of stuck with glue, is that still bookbinding? Like, what actually is the classification of bookbinding?
Yeah, so I mean, technically, that is bookbinding. Bookbinding is anything which binds, I think, you know, more than one signature together. So, you know, anything which is piled with paper and secured with a cover is bookbinding. But as a craft, is definitely not the same as it used to be, just because of, you know, business purposes, you know, having to make the money back, and which I get. But yeah, it's definitely become less aesthetic, we'll put it that way.
No, it's just, I always find that interesting as well to see the sort of the shortcuts that are made, I guess, in
definitely
in that respect. Because in terms of sort of the more traditional bookbinding, I guess, in the history of bookbinding, I mean, how would these, the sort of classic notebooks, I guess, that we think of, when were they starting to get developed? The sort of just a blank notebook that you just sell and someone takes it, rather than creating a book for the purpose of something.
I actually do not know that.
No worries.
The answer to that, I'm really sorry, but
yeah,
it will have been around probably like the 16th century that started to come out. Just because like up until then it was, I think reading was still very much kind of classist. And the creation of books, the creation of texts was still very much for religion, for medicine, for business. So people weren't really as much needing to do that. But again, you know, in the Roman Empire, you had those generals noting down dear diary, you know, kind of thing. So,
I guess that was sort of why I asked, because we were talking about the difference between, like sewn things or glued things, like, and one thing is a lot quicker and it's just like, well, we need this just to be able to note this, and the other one's more of a craft. And that's one of the classics, right? And nowadays, if you're like, oh, this is such a gorgeous notebook, I don't want to use it because it's too beautiful. No, but literally. I suppose they all would have been beautiful then in the past.
No, definitely. Yeah, yeah. I'd imagine that they'd have been utterly gorgeous rather than, you know, us kind of balking at this, this non-leather piece in front of us. But I think, again, it was one of those things where the more money you had, the more luxurious the notebook could be. So I don't know, maybe you had some Roman general far back buying a really snazzy leather notebook and just kind of bulking in his tent going, I don't know what to write in.
I can't write in this. I need to write my philosophy text. <Literally. in> Yeah, no, it's always fascinating. Well, I find, I find it very interesting to see indeed how it's gone back indeed, especially with, the start of tablets and, you know, computers and things. I mean, the idea of the notebook and bookbinding as a craft has also changed, I guess, once that all started, the kind of digital revolution.
No, definitely. I think it's like with CDs and everything, you know, as much as we move forward as a society with creating these digital things, there will always be a kickback. So I think that's why, you know, that's why bookbinding isn't an endangered craft. That's why hopefully it never will be, because as humans, we do love these very aesthetic, again, sorry, I'm going to use the word ritual, of, like, you know, creating these slow crafts and creating these products that take time, and hopefully things like that will never go out of style, but you never know.
I think that's a really interesting point. And the fact that it's been used for so many thousands of years indeed, and it's still going is...
Exactly. Yeah. Touch wood. We're all good for another few thousand.
Hopefully. Well, let's take a very quick break to top up our tea, but don't worry, we will be right back. Welcome back, everyone. I hope the teacup is fuller and the biscuit jar emptier. So thank you so much, Alexandra, for sharing that experience and that knowledge. That's, I'm always fascinated by notebooks, and it's really nice to hear that they have been going for thousands of years and hopefully will.
Thanks for asking me the question, because it's lovely to chat about it.
So we did talk a bit last episode already about kind of your work you do and the projects that you're involved in, but maybe we can go into just a little more detail with that at the end, because always nice to show alternative ways of doing things and different directions you could take if you're interested in or things like that. You know, you don't just have to, you know, do like you
said. Definitely.
So I guess the first thing is, you started this Solemnico, which is, as you mentioned, is now kind of this idea of a sort of luxury stationery brand, which talked about, notebooks are a luxury item, very high status, so you know, definitely what we need. When you, I mean, you said you started that kind of back in 2020, that's already, oh my gosh, it's already like 5 years ago.
Everything.
So what do you wish, I guess, you'd known when you first started out, specifically with the bookbinding, with the notebook creation, that you know now?
Definitely that, like, as much as people want to value what they're doing, very few people will be actually willing to pay the extra money which manual bookbinding demands, and just to kind of be ready for that.
I guess is the unfortunate thing of living in the modern age.
I know. And not trying to be aggressive about it, but buy independent if you can.
Well, and out of curiosity, what are, do you find the best kind of places for people who are starting out? What are the best places to approach, or the best, I don't know, platforms to use to try to promote these crafts or promote yourself as a crafter?
So, I mean, social media is great, you know, as much as I think for selling, more for kind of telling your story, you know, being very visual about it, showcasing what you're doing. It's great for that. And then platform wise, I think actually selling physically in shops is the best way to go about it. So like, I go from shop to shop. I'm basically a door-to-door salesman part-time as well. And then people can touch, can see, can really feel the quality of what you're doing. So yeah. If you are wanting to go down a more kind of traditional craft route, looking for physical ways of selling rather than maybe e-commerce is probably your best bet.
Yeah, which I guess is something that's also why a lot of us got into archaeology, because we love touching things and we love physical objects exactly. And everything. But and that's that link with traditional crafting. I mean, some people might be listening to these episodes and going, why is this on archaeology? But I think it's important to show that there's certain traditional crafts that are still alive today, but they are a part of history. And so it's important to try and support them in different ways.
Yeah, no, and it's really nice as well, because, you know, like I love history, I love archaeology. I'm not an archaeologist, but I really appreciate it. And I think it's lovely that some of these ancient crafts, because some of them are really ancient, are still alive today, and we're still trying to continue them, which is so nice.
Yeah, exactly. And so in terms of the kind of the bookbinding and the notebooks, that's sort of, I guess, the physical aspect you do. But you have so many other projects, which we kind of touched upon briefly in previous ones. So we mentioned already the kind of How We Came to Be project. Is that something that's still going now, or is it sort of taking a back burner?
Yeah, I mean, it took a back burner after COVID. I think people didn't have as much of a need for it, which I totally get, but it is still technically open. So if anyone listened to that and was like, oh, that's, you know, kind of what I'm looking for, then it is still open, but I'm less actively pursuing it.
Okay, yeah. And you also, you mentioned listening. You also have started a podcast, which I have been on. Shameless self-promotion as well.
No, it was great. It was great.
So what's the aim of the Solemnico podcast? What do you try to show through that?
Yeah, so I think it's definitely trying to show that you don't have to do the 9-to-5 to live a very fulfilling life, and that you can do life your own way, and you don't have to want what society tells you to want. It's okay to want a slower pace of life. It's okay to want quality over quantity. You know, it's okay to kind of value handmade things rather than, you know, mass produced branded things. So yeah, that's kind of the aim. And again, just showcasing thought leaders, academics such as yourself, small businesses, and trying to give them a platform to kind of make it more mainstream, for want of a better term.
Because I think, and I mean, we spoke a bit about this last episode as well. Yes. That's one of the issues with archaeology too, is that a lot of people assume, oh, you have to do it this way. This is the only way to be an archaeologist. But actually there's so many variations, and there's so many ways that you can bring your love of archaeology into the modern world, which I think is great. Because you also, I think, had on Ashley Airy of Ashford Candles, who is my co-host on another podcast on the internet to talk. And she's kind of the classic example of that, right? Like of having, she's got that background in archaeological knowledge. She is an archaeologist, but she's using a craft to kind of share that archaeology and share that knowledge.
No, 100%. And I do think that's the good thing about the modern world, is that you can do more than one thing, and that's totally socially acceptable. And because of the internet, we do know more about different avenues of work, different careers, which is, you know, that I think that is a good thing about the modern world.
Yeah, you can be anything you
want. Poster time.
Hopefully. And so you also have done, you mentioned sort of a lot of creative writing. I think you've done a lot of script writing as well. Is that something you still do as well?
Yeah, so not as much, just because, again, unfortunately, reality dictates that if you want to be a playwright or a scriptwriter, it's not reliable for the income. I love writing. Again, you know, it's so linked to the bookbinding and the notebooks. I think if you love writing, if you love writing, you probably love reading, and if you love reading, then you probably love notebooks and books. So I still really enjoy doing that, and, you know, you're still working on your books and everything.
So in the very background what's going on. But and are there any other kind of projects that are, I don't know, are coming up or that you're currently working on?
Yeah, so definitely still working on the writing. So if for some reason you're looking for a children's book, that's what I'm currently working on at the moment. So yeah, again, you know, the joy of being self-employed is that you can just take time out to do these projects. So yeah, I'm currently working on a children's picture book series, illustrating it, writing it, and then potentially self-publishing and binding it myself, which again is the joy of like learning this traditional craft, because then you can do things your own way, which is wonderful.
Oh, no, that does, well, that does sound very exciting. It's, if, you know, people, well, hang on, we'll get to that in a bit later. People will be able to find your contact details through the show notes, and then they can follow this project and see where it's going.
Oh, thank you.
And you mentioned another project when we were sort of first chatting about this podcast, but I'll see if I can remember, Bavarian Bartholomew?
Yes.
How do you say it? What is it?
I'm really sorry, I'm probably going to butcher this. Breviarium Bartholomew. Sorry for anyone who's a specialist in this. I apologize profusely. So what it is, like, going back to the bookbinding. So when big texts started to be produced, of course, it was less expensive to put several texts in one volume, which is why I think we've probably got, you know, these kind of almanacs, for want of a better term, that we have nowadays. And what the Bartholomew was a summary of medical texts, but not just by one person. The original was made incredibly high quality. It uses high quality vellum. Vellum is cow skin stretched. Sorry for anyone who's squeamish. And it's still housed at Pembroke College Library. So if you're there visiting and you want to have a look, you probably can. And its cheaper counterpart is known as MS2. And that's exactly the same text, but what it features is the original pieces of paper. And these were written by different people. And so they were on different quality parchment, different quality, you know, other materials. And so what you've got is this really boggled mass of texts all bound together. And it is an interesting one because it showcases that thing of it was so much cheaper to bind it all together, even if it wasn't by the same person or using the same materials, than it was to start from scratch and do it in a more, what we would call aesthetic term, probably nowadays.
That's really cool. Which, speaking of collaborations, do I also remember you talking about, have you ever done sort of collaboration project, bookbinding projects? I mean, have you ever been involved in something like that?
Yeah, no, totally. So what I love to do sometimes is talk to other small business owners who are crafters. So the most recent one was with To Be Adorned even, who is a crocheter and knit designer based in Bournemouth. What we did was we collaborated on a notebook design. So I made the notebook and then she adorned it. And that's just a really fun way, again, of showcasing different crafts, showcasing different ways of kind of making a notebook and doing something really unique and different while also making it modern.
Well, and I love that idea of indeed sort of, we call it in archaeology, cross-craft interaction. Where you have sort of so you have like different crafters working on the same project potentially. Or it's not even necessarily different crafters, but different craft understanding. Like you say, someone involved with crochet or knitting.
Yeah.
And then a professional bookbinder. So you have sort of, the two different crafts coming together.
I love that. I'm going to use that on my Instagram post.
There you go. You can say, this is really a classic example of cross-craft interaction.
I might need you to write it down for me.
That's fine. I'll give you a reference. And I guess a sort of final thing, I think we're coming to the end of this particular tea break, but before we get back to work, Alexandra, do you have any kind of exciting, I don't know, events or any plans or any other projects coming up which you want to tell people about?
Yes. Yeah, so the Notebook Club 2026, if you are listening and you want a high quality notebook subscription, that's a little bit different. So it's a subscription box with four notebooks around a theme. I don't know the theme yet. It is chosen by current members of the Notebook Club. So yeah, and I love the Notebook Club so much. It combines all of those things we've been talking about, you know, the kind of more traditional aspects, but also the really modern design aspects of bookbinding and notebook design. So yeah, that's kind of the main thing that's coming up and the main thing that I get so nerdy about it. I love it.
And speaking as a subscriber, I can say it's definitely, you know, it's very nice to get a cool parcel every quarter and it has all sorts of fun things. It has little goodies from small businesses and all that kind of stuff. So also can recommend if you're wanting to support a small business and a traditional craft, which, you know, we've been talking about how important that is to invest in these, you know, historic traditional crafts. That's, you know, a good place to start. If people want to find out more about the Notebook Club or about other projects that you're up to, where's the best place for them to go to learn about your work?
Yes, so go to my website, www.solemnico.com. That has links to everything, to my Instagram, the podcast, and then, yeah, there's a shop where you can buy all the goodies.
But, yeah. Lovely. Lovely, lovely.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Alexandra, for coming to nerd out with me about notebooks and bookbinding. It's been great having you.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I've had a great time.
And I hope that you listening also enjoyed this tea break. If you did, please, as always, do like, follow, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out the other shows on the APN for more fun archaeology content. If you'd like to learn more about the topic of today's episode or about Alexandra's work, you can find all the links and the contact information in the show notes. Thank you for joining me on this tea break. If you like this episode, please do like, follow, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check out the other shows on the APN for more fun archaeology content. And if you'd like to learn more about the topic of today's episode, make sure to check the show notes for links and further information.
The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.